I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. An article caught our attention in the conversation. Is hunting moral? A PhD candidate in Boston University wrote the piece and says hunters see the act of stalking and killing deer, ducks, moose, and other quarry as humane, necessary, and natural, and thus is ethical. Critics, hunting is a cruel and useless act, and one that should be shamed to carry out. Our guest is a non-hunter. He says that he believes that philosophy can help us clarify, systematize, and evaluate the arguments on both sides, and a better sense of the arguments can help us talk to people with whom we disagree. So we're going to be talking about this hour of the program. Joshua Duclos is our guest, and he is a PhD candidate in philosophy at Boston University. He has a BA degree from Connecticut College and an MA from the University of Chicago. He was a Fulbright Scholar in the Czech Republic. He was a summer research fellow at the Pardee Center for the Study of the Longer Range Future, and he has taught a wide variety of courses on ethics, political philosophy, logic, and intellectual history, and he teaches now at the Groton School in Massachusetts. And we thank you, Joshua, very much for being with us. An interesting article you wrote.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, but you're not a hunter, right?
I do not hunt, but I should clarify, I don't mean to imply at all that I was taking a position opposed to hunting. It's not a tradition I grew up with, so it's not something I can speak to the emotional or experiential aspect of, that's all.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, early in your article, the three rationales for hunting. What are they?
A very good philosopher named Gary Varner lays it out this way. He talks about therapeutic hunting, subsistence hunting, and sport hunting, and tries to do a kind of typology for each. Therapeutic hunting refers to the intentional killing of a wild animal where the goal is to either help that species or help another species or help the ecosystem. So an example given in the article was something called Project Isabella, which conservation groups got together and they intentionally tried to eradicate a certain species of goat on many of the Galapagos Islands because they were eating the vegetation that the tortoises depend on. So that would be an example of therapeutic hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Subsistence hunting is, as the name implies, the intentional killing of wild animals for either nourishment for human beings or to gather material resources, whether it would be bone or hide or something that you could harvest from the animal. And then the final kind is sport hunting, where the goal is some sort of experiential reward, whether you find it fulfilling or entertaining or interesting. And then, of course, the three are not mutually exclusive. One could engage in a hunt where you are doing therapeutic work, subsistence work, and a kind of sport work.
What is it that bothers people who are opposed to hunting? What bothers them about hunting?
It's a great question. There's many things that seem to bother people. The primary one is that it causes harm to animals. That seems to be the immediate reason that people go to. It's not always clear if critics are being consistent. Many people, I've found, oppose hunting without being vegetarian or without opposing, say, wearing leather shoes or leather belts. But it's the idea that a kind of intentional harm is being inflicted on animals.
And these are people, as you write, who are not comfortable, even people who are not comfortable extending legal rights to beasts.
Yeah. I mean, that's a strategy that critics sometimes try to employ. But the concept of legal rights, even for human beings, is extremely complicated. Starting in the 60s and 70s, a number of environmental thinkers thought about trying to extend this realm of rights to animals and even trees. In fact, it gets very complicated and difficult to defend that. But even without going down that road, what's undeniable, I think, at this point, is that a great many animals are sentient. They can be helped or harmed. They can suffer or avoid suffering. And hunting them or killing them clearly causes some sort of harm. So it's sort of the most immediate and simplest objection to jump to.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting. You say that if sound, this would require advocates to oppose all three types of hunting.
Yeah, if you take a hard line and say what I find to be objectionable morally with hunting is that it's causing unwanted harm to an innocent creature. If that's the case, then all three types of hunting would be objectionable. To a deer that's being hunted, say, it doesn't matter one bit to the deer whether it's being shot for sport reasons, subsistence reasons, or therapeutic reasons. The harm that the deer suffers is exactly the same.
And yet it would be hard to imagine that all people would agree that all three forms of hunting would be wrong simply because of the need for clothing and the need for food and the need for people who live in certain parts of the world to live off the land, to kill animals who are close to them.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's exactly right. So that's the objection from harm is sort of the first attempt that people will give to articulate the moral intuition that they have, that there's something wrong with hunting. But you push at it a little bit, and it starts to shake. The next attempt to sort of refine that objection is what I wanted to call the objection from unnecessary harm. So often people will point out that if something was morally objectionable just because it caused unwanted harm to an innocent creature, then predation, the act of one animal killing and eating another animal, would be just as morally objectionable as hunting. Very few people think that. Very few people are willing to take that position, though there are some notable contemporary philosophers who do.
Hmm.
So the essence of this objection is that they would point out when a lion takes a gazelle, there's a kind of necessity to the harm that's being caused. It would be a kind of subsistence hunting, if we wanted to call it that.
Right.
But the lion didn't sit down and reflect, you know, will I have beans and tofu today, or will I take a gazelle? It's something that the lion needed to do. Strictly speaking, there are very, very few groups of human beings for whom it's possible to make the argument that that kind of hunting, subsistence hunting, is necessary. There are some, but it would be the small minority of people who do engage in hunting.
Mm-hmm. What about this objection we give some people who are opposed to hunting, who oppose to, and this creates concern on the part of those who are hunters, that there's something wrong with their character?
Yeah, I find this to be the most interesting objection, and at least in the conversations I've had with people who are deeply opposed to hunting, this is usually where they shake out. They can acknowledge that sometimes it's necessary for subsistence. They can acknowledge that sometimes it's necessary for therapeutic reasons. But what really seems to rub them the wrong way is the idea that there are people who enjoy it. That, as in sport hunting, what you're looking for is some sort of fulfilling experience or emotional ordeal. And you actually enjoy the act of stalking and killing some kind of animal. A good example of this that got a lot of publicity was the American dentist who shot Cecil the Lion, mm-hmm, in Africa. This was a lion that Americans had never heard of. In fact, very few Kenyans had ever heard of Cecil the Lion either, but it came out he had killed this lion, and the outrage was enormous. He lost his practice, he had to move, had to go into hiding, was receiving death threats. It did no significant ecological damage, and while it did take the life of one creature, the furor that followed it seemed a bit out of proportion. And what seemed to bother people the most was that there was maybe, in their view, something wrong with someone who would pay tens of thousands of dollars just for the opportunity to kill another animal.
And it also depends on the kind of animal, right? This was a lion. It was Cecil the Lion, a majestic creature. If it had been another animal with
Certainly.
Which we don't associate feelings of majesty or great beauty, it may have been quite different, right?
Certainly, yeah. If if this dentist had been shooting rats in his backyard with a BB gun,
right,
and the local newspaper ran a story on it, it's unlikely it would have got the same attention. There's a number of factors to consider there. One, we do have emotional attachments with charismatic megafauna like lions that we don't with other sorts of animals. But it's also important to take into consideration whether these animals are endangered or threatened. And I suspect in this case there was a reaction to what some people viewed as a kind of neo-imperialism, an American paying a great deal of money to go to Africa and engage in hunting. I would point out there was a very interesting op-ed piece in the New York Times that followed the killing of Cecil the Lion, written by a Kenyan graduate student studying in the United States, who was repeatedly getting posts on his Facebook page telling him how sorry people were that this great national symbol had been killed. He'd never heard of the lion, and he confessed in the op-ed piece that his first thought when he heard about it was, good, they got one.
Really?
And then he went on to explain that for a child growing up in certain rural villages in Kenya, lions are extremely dangerous, and in some sense, they're the enemy. And so it's one thing for someone in Boston or New York or Chicago to read about this and romanticize the sad death of Cecil the Lion, and he was trying to point out it's quite another thing if you're living there and lions are competing for resources and space and life.
Mm-hmm. What about the question of hunting an animal that's endangered? There's a lot of that going on, too.
Absolutely. Sometimes when this happens, are you talking legally or illegally?
Illegally.
Illegally. Well, I think that simplifies the moral issue. If you're illegally hunting endangered animals, I'm not sure you're going to have a great deal of a moral cover. That seems a simple case of wrong for me, but perhaps your guests will have another view on that. Mm-hmm. There are cases of hunters legally hunting endangered species, which still creates some controversy. Several African countries, I was just reading about one case in Botswana, will sanction the legal hunts of certain endangered species like black rhinos. And the reason they will do this is because this is where they raise the funds necessary to keep their national park services running, to fund things, their equivalent of fish and game departments. And again, on the one hand, the hunters will point out, look, it's our dollars paying for these hunting licenses, in some cases buying them at auction at extremely high prices, that are going to fund conservation and preservation. On the other hand, the critics will point out there seems to be something a little off about a human being who would only pay money to protect animals so long as they get the opportunity to kill one in return.
Mm-hmm. You talk about other moral questions associated with hunting, and I'm wondering how you answer these. Does it matter whether hunters use bullets or arrows or snares?
Yeah, this is it's an interesting question that we didn't have space in the article to talk about. Something that comes up quite frequently in discussions about hunting when people are listing various objections is that it's just not fair to the animal. They'll say something like it's unfair or grotesque if you have a hunter with a high-powered rifle 200 yards away on a telescopic sight taking out an animal. And if that's true, then it would prompt the question, well, if you're using a bow or you're using a sling or you're engaging in a very old form of endurance hunting where you chase the animal until it's too exhausted to move and club it or something like that, is it somehow more morally permissible? On the one hand, I would say from the animal's point of view, it can't matter one bit. Often the modern, most unfair methods of hunting, something like using a high-powered rifle with a scope from far away, is going to be the least painful death that animal could hope to experience living in the wild, certainly less painful than natural predation, say if we're talking about deer by wolves or coyotes,
mm-hmm.
Or in the case of a gazelle by a lion. On the other hand, I think this would get us back to the character objection, if there's going to be something that people want to see redeeming about hunting, it's that it's a practice that requires many years of preparation, certain virtues and excellences that take a long time to develop, that not just anyone can do, that show a great understanding of the natural environment and the animal involved. And if you simply do something like go to a lake with a stick of dynamite and toss it in and then collect the fish that come to the top, it's hard to maybe see why you would respect someone who does that. But again, from the animal's point of view, it's not clear that it would matter.
We want to welcome phone calls. I think we'll have many of them for you. Our guest this hour is Joshua Duclos. He's a PhD candidate in philosophy at Boston University and wrote a very interesting piece, and we thought it would make for a good talk show. Is hunting moral? How do you answer that question? And what other questions do you ask as a result of that question? That's the subject of this hour. And here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is ideas@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. We'll return and have you be a part of our conversation in a moment here on the Ideas Network. All right, full bank of phone lines. Let's go to John for Joshua. Hi, John.
Stoughton. Hello.
Hi, John. Go ahead.
Oh, hey.
Hi.
I grew up in eastern Oregon in ranch country. My dad was a meat cutter. My uncle ran a beef slaughter business. And if you want to have some moral issue regarding the cruelty of animals, there's nothing more cruel than a beef steer being processed, you know, or a hog for that matter. And, you know, with hunting, from a cruelty standpoint, you have an animal that's lived its entire life in a natural state and is usually taken down with one single kill shot in a very, what I regard as a humane way, rather than, you know, like as I mentioned to the screener, beef cattle being literally tortured to death as they're being processed and raised for consumption. So, if there's any sort of moral issue, I think it should be directed towards the food we raise and how we raise it.
Joshua.
Hi, John. Thanks for the comment. I want to say that I completely agree with you. In fact, and one of the peculiar things that you notice when you have discussions with people about the morality of hunting is that frequently you'll have people who are deeply opposed to hunting but are not vegetarian and don't have any strong convictions about eating factory-farmed meat. This to me seems like a clear inconsistency and in simply a measurement of suffering. There's no question that factory-farmed animals suffer far, far more than animals harvested in the wild.
Do you hunt?
Yeah.
John, do you
hunt? I do hunt, yes. And also I'm a catch-and-release fly fisher.
Uh-huh.
I would like to point out that, you know, at least in Wisconsin here, I'm from Oregon originally, but here in Wisconsin you have so much dairy cattle raised on grass that you drive around here, the cattle look very content and happy in their lives. But you go out west where cattle are raised strictly for beef production, and it's a much different situation. And even on, you know, maybe on organic farms it's a different situation, but, you know, it's a very cruel and inhumane and a way of processing meat, and I think also I believe that everybody should know where their food comes from, and to see somebody, I think everyone should have to kill an animal one time for their meat. I think it would put a different perspective on all this. I mean, there are children who have no idea where eggs and milk come from, so I think if you had to kill your own food at least one time in your life, it would make you appreciate the food you have, you know, at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Joshua.
Yeah, John, it's an interesting point, and perhaps one explanation for why certain people have strong objections to hunting but not strong objections to factory farming is that most of us have some sense, either firsthand or what we get from the media or movies, of what hunting looks like, aiming a gun, firing it, an animal bleeding out in the woods. But as you rightly point out, many of us don't actually know what the conditions of factory farming are. So that may be part of the explanation. However, for people who are strict vegetarians, it's still possible for them to object to both. And you could say that an animal killed in the wild by a hunter, even done legally, it may suffer less than say a factory farmed steer. But they would point out less doesn't make it better or permissible.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call, John. We have Mike on Facebook who writes, many people I know hunt because it's far cheaper than buying the same meat at the store, not to mention that the meat is leaner and healthier for them, no antibiotics or hormones.
Yeah, well, I can't speak to the health question. I suppose that would depend what kind of meat you were buying and where you were buying it. There may be exceptions depending on where certain people live, but I'm skeptical of the idea that it's ultimately cheaper, especially since factory farmed meat these days is so incredibly inexpensive. Even if you you're budgeting in hunting licenses and ammunition and weapons and the hunting gear you need, I'm not sure I'd be convinced that a good defense of hunting is that it's more economically feasible. Though there may be particular instances where that's the case.
Mm-hmm. What about the argument that you read about? Is hunting natural? All pre-industrial human societies engage in it to some degree, and therefore hunting can't be immoral.
Yeah, I find this one of the most worrying arguments that comes up in moral philosophy, and it doesn't just happen with hunting. It happens with anything. There's a very old idea in the history of philosophy that if you can show that something is natural, then that also means it's good, and you have moral cover. It's a bit confusing why something, just because it's natural, would also be good. We could give a laundry list of things that are natural that we in no way think are good and have done our very best to eliminate, things like Ebola or AIDS or postpartum depression or Alzheimer's or lower back pain or male pattern baldness. I mean, pick anything you want. Just because something happens naturally doesn't mean it's good. The Onion, a satirical newspaper, ran a funny article a while back saying something like, new study finds sexism rampant in nature. Now, in a sense, this is true. What would be very strange is if someone then tried to make the argument that because sexism is so prevalent in nature that we have many patriarchal animal societies, and therefore it must be natural, and human beings should maintain the same system.
Let's go next to Anna in Viroqua. Hi, Anna.
Hi. When I go into restaurants or when I go grocery shopping, I'm a vegetarian, but I will eat venison that my friends have got because it's one of the only sources of clean meat that I can get. And in terms, I agree with the other caller who said that the cruelty, who spoke of the cruelty of farmed animals, that's why I would not eat conventional meat. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important.
So if something were killed with a gunshot and the animal were killed instantly, it could be venison, it could be another animal. If it were killed that way, it would be acceptable for you, Anna?
Yes. Yes, and one of the reasons why is because I actually live in Michigan, and in some areas the deer are so plentiful that they risk starving to death mm-hmm. if they're not hunted.
Well, that's something we haven't talked about yet, Joshua.
Yeah, that's an issue of therapeutic hunting where often you would see hunting as permissible because it's either necessary or beneficial for the ecosystem or for the species in question, that you might think these animals are actually going to suffer far more if we don't intervene, if we don't reduce the population, there will be a winter starvation, and certainly starving to death in the winter is going to be a worse death than a clean shot.
Thank you, Anna, unless you had something else.
No, I was just going to say that, I'm sorry. No,
okay. Thank you. What you said well. Chris in Mineral Point. Hi.
Hi. I just have a comment. I grew up hunting. My dad taught me when I was very young, if you take a shot, you make it a kill shot. If you can't make it a kill shot, then you don't shoot the animal. Where I live right now, we have coons so badly that just Saturday morning when I was coming home from work, there was one with distemper on the road. My husband and I coon hunt and we deer hunt. And I don't even think in some cases, like your previous caller, that it's even about morality. It's about necessity because these animals are getting so sick because they are so overpopulated. Because unlike northern Michigan, where I live, we have had one mild winter after another. And like coon can have 2-3 litters a year. And it's become so overpopulated that the coon are not healthy in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch an animal with distemper and stuff, it just makes you sick.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. And so we usually try to go out and find it. Go home, get the gun, find it, and put it out of its misery. And so, yeah, I think, and I agree with your first caller. I mean, every animal that we eat, we make certain it's had grass under its feet at one time. Mm-hmm. We either raise it ourselves or a friend raises it. Because I've seen the horribleness that goes on in slaughter plants. But I truly think that sometimes it's not about morality necessarily, that it's just you do it out of respect for the animals because you hate to see them suffer.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, just one last thing, too. My dad, you commented about guns versus bow hunting, etc. My dad was well known as a tracker, and he'd have guys that were out bow hunting deer call him at night. Can you help me find my deer?
Uh-huh.
Because with a bow, it's very rare, unless you get lucky, that you get a good kill shot sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You end up having to track that deer, and it suffers the whole time.
Right.
If you've ever followed a blood trail, it's really disheartening. And with a gun, if you were raised properly and you practice, that deer, boom, it's done, you know? It's the quickest way to keep that animal from having to suffer. And so, anyway, I just wanted to comment because there are so many anti-hunting people out there, and they really, truly, I don't think, see what goes on out in the woods and what these animals are suffering because humans have moved into every place that they populate.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Thank you.
Could I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm curious, do you make any sort of moral distinctions between the ways that people hunt, the means in which an animal is killed, whether it was a rifle or a certain kind of rifle or bow hunting or trapping or a certain kind of trapping? Do you think that the way in which it is done makes a moral difference?
I don't judge others, but for me, I think the quickest kill way is the most humane way. If you see animals in, say, like leg traps and stuff, they're sitting there sometimes as much as 24 hours before the trapper can come along because you're supposed to check your traps, I believe, every 24 hours. And they'll sit there and wait. And you'll see evidence of them where they're chewing off their legs to get away, things like that. A conibear trap, which is illegal, kills quickly, but it also kills everything that steps on it. You know, if you're out with a dog, say for a walk, and your dog happens to come across a conibear trap, it's going to kill your dog.
Oh.
So it's just, yeah, I guess I do make a moral distinction there.
Mm-hmm. Joshua.
No, but thank you. That's interesting to hear from the perspective of someone who does hunt.
Right. We haven't heard from a lot of people who find hunting morally objectionable. Maybe it's because it's Wisconsin. I'm wondering, do you think, as you've explored this question, are there a lot of people who think that hunting is morally questionable?
Well, I can only speak anecdotally now, but certainly, although my day-to-day conversations are kind of a skewed sample set. I'm coming from the Northeast, very liberal academia, so that's not necessarily a great cross section of America. But certainly, there are a great many people who find hunting objectionable, or sometimes even if they wouldn't be opposed to other people doing it, would say that they themselves personally couldn't possibly do it. They just think it's not right. And it would be really wonderful to hear from some of those people if any of them are listening.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll give you the phone number. 800-486-8655 is our number. Chris, thanks for your call. Jennifer in Appleton, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering if your guest, he raised the situation regarding Cecil the Lion in Africa. And what I'm wondering is, in doing his research, did the guest come across any reports regarding allegations that this particular lion had been living on protected land, was a protected lion, but had been lured off of that land in order for the American hunter to be able to shoot and kill the lion? And I have two questions. Did your guest come across any reports to that effect? And if so, would the killing of that lion be considered immoral, that is, luring a protected animal off of protected land to shoot the animal, would that then constitute an immoral killing?
I'm sorry, I missed the guest's or the caller's name.
Jennifer.
Jennifer. Jennifer, so I've read many conflicting accounts of the incident involving Cecil the Lion, and so everything I say, I guess there should be a caveat that I have not verified it. From what I can piece together, the animal, the lion, was killed out of the bounds where it was permissible to hunt. Now, whether it was lured out of bounds or whether it was an accident, as I think the hunter claims, I don't know, and I'm not in a position to weigh in. As for the how the morality of it would change, I think the legality of it would change, but from my perspective, I'm not sure why the morality of killing a sentient being would change because it's slipped over a border that's been instituted by a certain bureaucracy. So I can't see how that would be relevant. It would be relevant legally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand. Yeah, my question had more to had to do with if an animal is living on a refuge, say, and that that animal is lured by humans off of the land and then killed, would that be an immoral act on the part of the hunter and the workers that lured the animal off that protected land? So what I'm hearing is that, in your opinion, that would not be immoral?
No. I think it would, though. I think it's starting to get away from the morality of hunting. You know, I would think it would be morally objectionable for a few reasons, that if you're deliberately subverting the law of, a foreign country, if you're deliberately breaking a just agreement that you've made when you've applied for a certain kind of hunting license, I think there are many things that you could find morally objectionable about that. I was just trying to point out, I'm not sure that the morality of hunting itself changes the morality of killing the animal, but certainly I think there are a number of reasons to object to luring animals out of protected designated refuges so that you could kill them.
I think in the example of that dentist, I think what might be at the root of the most people's objection, apart from whether or not he did lure the animal, because we don't know, has to do with the appearance of just excess of monetary expenditure.
Right.
I'm sorry, the appearance of what?
Monetary expenditure, paying a lot of money to be able to kill the animal.
Right, I agree. I think that is the root of it. This is something that gets put under the label of trophy hunting, which it was. I don't think the dentist had any plans to eat the lion, and even if he had, no one's going to buy an argument that he needed it to survive. So this is someone who is willing to pay an enormous amount of money to go to a foreign country just for the chance to kill something. And that gets back to this idea of the objection from character that lions die all the time. Only 1 in 8 male lions survives to adulthood, and there's very little media coverage of that. It's just what happens. So it's not that this one lion died. It's that suddenly attention was drawn to the fact that there are people who spend enormous amounts of money and derive great pleasure from killing these charismatic megafauna.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if the whole debate about how we kill animals in the wild, and certainly we've started to see some of this consideration of how we raise animals for eating and in farms, large farms where everybody's crowded together, our definition of what a sentient animal has been changing. We find out more and more that more animals have feelings where we never thought that they did before. How does that change the whole hunting debate, Joshua?
Well, I think we've known that animals are sentient for quite some time. Going back, let's say, at least to the late 18th century, the philosopher Jeremy Bentham, the inventor of utilitarianism, said that this is really the first principle of moral philosophy. The question is not, can it think, or is it rational, or is it a person, or does it have rights? The question is, can a certain being suffer? And if it's capable of suffering, then it's worthy of moral consideration. Now, not everyone takes that to be the first or last word in moral philosophy. But even people who think that hunting is permissible, or think that factory farming meat is permissible, or that fishing is permissible, should acknowledge that these animals are sentient, that they do have the capacity to experience pain.
Let's go to this message from Harriet on Facebook. Natural cultures, of course, hunt for food. Native Americans also thank the animal for giving its life so that they may live. They had reverence for all living things, including the animals they hunted. I would like to hear something about this ethical system as well.
Was the first part of that post natural cultures?
It says for food, Native Americans. Just Native American culture. It doesn't say natural culture.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought.
Yeah, you're right. It starts that way. Natural cultures, of course, hunt for food.
Yeah, sorry. So that right. Just jumped out at me. I'm not sure what's meant by natural cultures. I suspect something like pre-industrial. I think there's a danger of romanticizing pre-industrial cultures. Any societies that are subsistence have either hunter-gatherers or hunter-gatherer and a combination of agriculture are necessarily going to have a greater connection to the land and their food sources than industrialized societies do, where there's a greater division of labor. And at this point in America, very few of us actually work in any industry where we're producing the food we eat. Sometimes this fact is taken to mean that these pre-industrial societies are somehow morally superior. I've never seen any reason to think that that's the case, but it would bring me back to what our first caller, John, I think, mentioned, and that's simply the fact that if you are at some point in your life in some way exposed to or forced to be engaged with the food you actually eat, whether it's growing it, harvesting it, raising it, hunting it, I do think you come to have a greater understanding and respect. But that simply comes from experience. I don't think it's a matter of one culture having a superior way of relating to the world than another.
More phone calls in a moment, 800-486-8655. The question of the hour, is hunting moral? Our guest is a PhD candidate in philosophy at Boston University. He's taught a number of courses in ethics, political philosophy, logic, and intellectual history. He currently teaches at Groton School in Groton, Massachusetts. This is the Ideas Network. All right, let's go back to phone calls and Patricia in Portage. Hi, Patricia.
I write the Mad Raven Speak Living Wildlife column for the Capital Times, and I've been looking at hunting in this state for 20 years. And it has become more and more recreational, more and more cruel, less and less fair chase, more and more destructive. And with two-thirds of wildlife on this planet destroyed in just 50 years, one-third left, and with 60% of large mammals threatened with extinction right now, trophy hunting has become major. And the reason for this, and I just want to emphasize how important this is that state and federal agencies that manage our wildlife and public lands are funded primarily on killing licenses. So that excludes 90% of us who go to the hearings and try to stop something from being killed or some season or some extra weaponry. We are completely excluded because general public funds need to fund these agencies desperately now. We are warned that that hunting is a big part of destroying the balance of nature. So we really need to focus and have the Wisconsin Public Radio focus on reforming the system to represent all of us so we all have some say instead of being shut out of this entire management system.
Joshua.
It's another excellent point. There is a serious political imbalance. Most fish and game services and many wildlife preserves or recreation areas, the money to staff and maintain these areas comes from the hunters. So hunters will often make the argument that they're the first line of conservation or preservation. Not only is it their dollars going to fund it, but many of them would argue they're the ones who have a long-term interest in maintaining these areas, maintaining healthy populations, maintaining a good ecological balance so that they can continue to hunt and their children can continue to hunt. But what does happen is if they're the ones providing the money, then they're the ones who have the political leverage.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Patricia, very much for your call. A good one it was. Bill in Maquanico, hi.
Morning, or afternoon.
Afternoon, Bill.
I am having a problem. I'm in my car, and I don't have access to my computer or my Webster, but I need to have a definition of moral, immoral, versus humane, inhumane. I think it's kind of an ambiguous issue, but needs to be addressed.
Okay. Is there a significant?
I'm afraid I'm going to give a very disappointing answer. For humane and inhumane, usually what's meant by that is if something is humane, it's how a human being ought to be treated. If it's inhumane, it's not something we would do to a human being, therefore it's not something we would do to an animal. So say a humane society for pets, the idea is that these animals are given the same respect and consideration as a human being would. I can't give a simple definition for morality or immorality for the reason that that's what's up for discussion right now. The best that I can do and what I try to do in the article and in other writing is when people claim that hunting is immoral, try and figure out what they mean. Some of those meanings seem to be initially it causes harm, it causes unwanted harm, it causes unwanted, unnecessary harm to an innocent creature. It shows a lack of moral character on behalf of the person doing the hunting, and then pursue those lines of inquiry and see how well they hold up. But that's kind of what's up for debate, is what would it mean for hunting to be immoral? What would it mean for hunting to be moral?
Thanks so much for your call. Kelly writes, a listener, after passing hunter's education as a child, I began bow hunting about the age of 13. My first year, I shot at and hit a spike. After seeing the arrow sticking out of the deer, I proceeded to empty my quiver until the deer died, and then I cried afterwards. I didn't participate in cleaning the deer or eating the meat. I've never hunted again and never will. I support others' decision to hunt, but I don't find it moral.
That's a fascinating email. I would unfortunately, she's not on the line. I'd love to know what she means when she says she does not find it moral, but she would support the
right.
decision of others to hunt. To me, that seems curious. You often will say when it's just something's just a matter of preference, look, I choose not to do it myself, but if you want to, go ahead, no harm done. But
mm-hmm.
this seems to be a case where the poster was saying there is harm done. I do find it objectionable, but so long as it's you doing the wrong thing, go ahead and do it. There seems to be some contradiction there.
Mm-hmm. Kay is next in Madison. Hi, Kay. Hi, Kay. You there? Okay, Kay is not there. Teresa in Viroqua. Hi.
Hi. I want to preface this by saying my kids and I, we raise our own chicken for meat. We also raise chickens for eggs, and they're completely different kind of creatures, to tell you the truth. But I did not grow up in Wisconsin, and I find the whole hunting culture to be very odd and dangerous, frankly. There's a lot of alcohol that's involved. I mean, I see the impact, let's just put it this way, on the hunters. And I'm sure there's a lot of responsible hunters out there, but there's also just as many irresponsible hunters that are drunk, that are belligerent. And it's very strange to me. During hunting season this past year, we went to the local reserve to hike, figuring, okay, it's a place where they safeguard animals. No, there's bullets whizzing by, and it's a party of people, guys particularly, who are drunk. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, can you give us a chance to get out of the area before you just continue shooting? And it's the attitude was one of, it's our problem, it's our fault, we shouldn't be walking in a reserve on a hiking trail during hunting season. And I found that very peculiar. And then during the off season, we were walking, hiking, and my son, we heard the sound of a goose call, and, you know, squawking. So my son, who was 10, made the noise back. And then, strangely enough, it responded to him. We had been actually kind of quietly hiking. But this went on back and forth, until someone opened fire on us. And it's not hunting season. I ran for the car and was honking the horn to make it clear that we were, you know, people who were here. And they started shooting towards our car. And I actually, of course, I got out of the area right away, and I called the police. The police came out and were kind of like, well, you know, they're probably on their own land. They probably didn't step foot on public lands. And, you know, yeah, calls are illegal, but there was just a lot of excuse making for the behavior that was clearly inappropriate and dangerous. And I see it again and again, frankly, and I know this isn't the popular position to take, even amongst friends of mine who hunt. And, you know, I agree full-heartedly with the woman who called about preserving animals and the dangers and immorality, in my opinion, with trophy hunting. But even the hunting that goes on, not from a trophy perspective, but for substance, you know, to subsist.
Mm-hmm. Joshua.
So if I'm hearing you right, it's the culture surrounding hunting.
That's what I was hearing.
That bothers you, as well as the sort of public safety aspect. Is that correct?
Yep, absolutely. We can't even go out. We live in the country, so when it's, get your kids out of the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so I've actually never been to Wisconsin or hunted in Wisconsin. I would guess that anyone from Wisconsin Fish and Game that's hearing this would be equally disturbed and worried about the safety of citizens. I would like to respond to the culture aspect in a way. So this is another common defense that's often used for the morality of hunting, is that it's a kind of cultural preservation, that different types of hunting cultures arise in different communities and different environments and different places, and it's something that's passed down from generation to generation to generation. And to try and eliminate it just by fiat, even if done in a democratic way, is to kill off a part of the culture that will never come back. I've never found this a terribly convincing argument, and it doesn't just have to do with the fact that certain hunting cultures might be objectionable. It sounds like your experience is that there's not a lot redeemable in that. But just my worry is that if you use the excuse, well, X is a cultural practice, therefore X deserves to be preserved, that kind of thinking and those kind of arguments have been used to preserve repugnant, mm-hmm. nefarious practices the world over for centuries.
And on that note, we're going to have to say goodbye. Our time has flown on by. We thank you very much, Joshua Duclos, for being with us. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this show. Is Hunting Moral, and to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. News coming up from NPR. We're with you again tomorrow with a tribute to Chuck Berry at 1 o'clock.